Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, it's graduation time, and I always thought one of the best essays that I've ever read was written by columnist Mary Schmeek many years ago, but still very contemporary today. It was originally published as a mock, facetious, sardonic graduation speech in a column by the very talented Chicago Tribune journalist, hypothetically delivering a commencement speech. What kind of advice would she give? Impart some sage, thoughtful, always remembered words of wisdom. And it's entitled, and it was a little book too, and it was entitled, Wear Sunscreen, A Primer for Real Life. Mary writes, to all the graduates out there, whether it's grammar school, high school or college, kindergarten or graduate school, wear sunscreen. If I could only offer you one tip of advice for the future, sunscreen would be it. The long-term benefits of sunscreen have been proven by scientists, whereas the rest of my advice has no basis more reliable than my own meandering experience. I will dispense this advice now. Enjoy the power and beauty of your youth. Never mind. You will not understand the power and beauty of your youth until you've faded. But trust me, in 20 years, you'll look back at photos of yourself and recall in a way you can't grasp now how much possibility lay before you and how fabulous you really looked. You are not as fat as you imagine. Don't worry about the future, or worry, but know that worrying is as effective as trying to solve an algebra equation by chewing bubblegum. The real troubles in your life are apt to be things that never crossed your worried mind, the kind that blindside you at 4 p.m. on some idle Tuesday. Do one thing every day that scares you. Sing. Don't be reckless with other people's hearts. Don't put up with people who are reckless with yours. Floss. Don't waste your time on jealousy. Sometimes you're ahead, and sometimes you're behind. The race is long, and in the end, the race is really only with yourself. Remember compliments you receive and forget the insults. Keep your old love letters. Throw away your old bank statements. Stretch. Don't feel guilty if you don't know what you want to do with your life. The most interesting people I know didn't know at 22 what they wanted to do with their lives. Some of the most interesting 40-year-olds still don't. Get plenty of calcium. Plenty of calcium. Be kind to your knees. You'll miss them when they are gone. Or your hips. Maybe you'll marry. Maybe you won't. Maybe you'll have children and maybe you won't. Maybe you'll divorce at 40. Maybe you'll dance the funky chicken on your 75th wedding anniversary. Whatever you do, don't congratulate yourself too much or berate yourself either. Your choices are half chance, so are everybody else's. Enjoy your body. Use it every day you can. Don't be afraid of it or of what other people think of it. It's the greatest instrument you'll ever own. Dance, even if you have nowhere to do it but your own living room. Read the directions, even if you don't follow them. Do not read beauty magazines. They will only make you feel ugly. Get to know your parents. You never know when they'll be gone for good. Be nice to your siblings. They're your best link to your past and the people most likely to stick with you in the future. Understand that friends come and go, but with a precious few, you should hold on. Work hard to bridge the gaps in geography and lifestyle, because the older you get, the more you need the people who knew you when you were young. Respect your elders. Don't expect anyone else to support you. Maybe you have a trust fund. Maybe you'll have a wealthy spouse. But you never know when either one might run out. Don't mess too much with your hair, or by the time you're 40, it will look 85. And remember, be careful whose advice you buy, but be patient with those who supply it, because advice is really just a form of nostalgia. But trust me on the sunscreen. That's from Mary Schmeek, her commencement address. Wear sunscreen, a primer for real life. Let's enjoy a little music from Dr. Lonnie Liston Smith. Quiet Moments, and we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. Dr. Lonnie Liston-Smith, Quiet Moments, and we're back on The Kevin Moore Show. Well, if any of our listeners are so inclined to visit our website, www.kevinmoorepresents.com, you'll see that we've been very fortunate to have some very interesting, talented, and accomplished guests from the worlds of entertainment and music and film, the literary arts, the world of food and wine, and a myriad of other pursuits. And it's been both a pleasure and an honor to chat with them and make their acquaintance. But my guest with whom I will be soon speaking, our first guest, has always been a special joy. He is an erudite, scholarly, well-spoken, and thoroughly informational gentleman of the classical and contemporary arts, and I so very much enjoy the lively and engaging conversation we share. So if I may, let me start with a definition of a dramaturge. A dramaturge is a professional within a theater or opera company who deals mainly with research and development of plays or operas, explaining their various types, their interconnectedness, and their styles. A dramaturge provides historical and cultural research into the play or opera and its setting. Those snapping fingers, that jazzily balletic race down an alley, the clambering over a chain-link fence to escape the cops, the fire escape romance, the seductive but charged mambo at a dance in a school gym, the brutal war between the Jets and the Sharks, the senseless loss of young lives, the impotence of the adults trying to stop it all. These are among the many iconic elements of West Side Story, the landmark 1957 musical that transposed the wealthy but warring families of Verona, Italy, in Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, into a vision of the mean streets of New York in the 1950s, a place where white and Puerto Rican street gangs engage in a heated turf war. This is a rare opportunity to see a full-fledged stage version of the musical that initially united the monumental talents of composer Leonard Bernstein, director-choreographer Jerome Robbins, writer Arthur Lawrence, and in his Broadway debut, lyricist Stephen Sondheim. The Chicago premiere of Lyric's new co-production of Leonard Bernstein and Stephen Sondheim's masterpiece West Side Story features nearly 100 artists from Chicago and across the country. Performances of the grand-scale musical run at the Lyric Opera House through June 2nd. Tickets are on sale now and can be purchased at lyricopera.org or by calling 312-827-5600. And from one of our town's great critics and reviewers, this is what's been said. This fresh, new, bold production of the classic musical West Side Story is so exciting, it makes you ache with pleasure. Everything about it is streamlined, the fluid jolt of Jerome Robbins' choreography, the exhilarating syncopation of Leonard Bernstein's score, the bravura concision of Stephen Sondheim's lyrics, the swiftness of Arthur Lawrence's superb storytelling. It's both airborne and transcendent, with moments of astonishing stagecraft. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning staff member of the Lyric Opera of Chicago, where he has invaluably served as a dramaturge since 1995, commentator for the opera broadcast, program editor, special lecturer, and the writer of the projected supertitles we view at the opera. Roger is worked with the San Diego Opera and the Dallas Opera and has contributed many articles to both American and European publications and has served for many years as the Metropolitan Opera's Opera Quiz, now presenting the Leonard Bernstein and Stephen Sondheim masterpiece West Side Story through June 2nd at the Lyric Opera House of Chicago, 20 North Wacker. Our good friend, Mr. Roger Pine. Roger, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you so much. Such a pleasure.
You know, the pleasure is always mine, and it's always, as I said before, an engaging conversation. So I'm going to start it out, and we're going to run from here. How's that?
Sure.
Arthur Lawrence and Leonard Bernstein are talking about a play that they had an idea about somewhere in, let's say, a deli in California. And it's about a Italian family and a young man, Italian young man, and a Jewish family who's just survived the Holocaust, who has a beautiful daughter. And these two young ones are in love. And the Italian group of kids are called the Jets. And the Jewish group of kids are called the Emeralds. And it's entitled East Side Story. But then they both came to New York and things changed. I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, it was decided to change it so that you had the Jets and the Sharks. The Sharks being a group of a gang of kids who were originally from Puerto Rico. The Jets were just New Yorkers, you know, streetwise New Yorkers. And that was a conflict that seemed to be more comfortable for the whole creative team. I think for Arthur Lawrence especially. I mean, he was responsible for the book. And it all just sort of fell into place from there. Once it was decided to make that change, it all just happened comparatively easily, I think. Because they were all... This is the most extraordinary creative team that's ever been put together for a Broadway musical. I mean, really. I mean, when you think about the level of talent involved. And they were all, even though they had all, with the exception of Sondheim, for whom it was a Broadway debut, they'd all had success on Broadway already, but they were really navigating in new water with this piece. There were so many differences in what people had come to expect of a, quote, Broadway musical, you know, that people had expectations involving things like a big chorus number at the beginning and a sort of sweet love story with a happy ending. There was no happy ending in West Side Story. There was a deeply tragic ending.
Right,
people didn't know what to make of that. And they also, the team, they really didn't know what the reception was going to be, and when it was a triumph, it astonished them. We had here last Saturday for the matinee someone who was profoundly important in the creation of West Side Story, and that was the first Maria, the great Carol Lawrence.
Oh, really?
Yes.
No kidding. Carol Lawrence was a friend of my uncle's when the Studebaker Theater. My uncle was the ticket manager of the Studebaker Theater, of course, down the street on Michigan Avenue, when it was in its heyday. And this goes back years and years and years. And it's right, Carol Lawrence and Larry Kurt, wasn't it? Larry Kurt?
Yeah. The two of them created the roles the roles of Maria and Tony, Maria being her brother is the leader of the Sharks, the Puerto Rican group,
right.
And Tony is a former member of the Jets. In any case, when Carol Lawrence has told many times, I think, the story of the tryout in Washington, where at the end there was absolute silence at the end of the performance, and then a minute later, the audience was screaming its lungs out with enthusiasm, and that hit them like a ton of bricks. I mean, the people involved in the show had no expectation for that kind of response. And now, when it came to New York, it had competition in The Music Man, and The Music Man was the show that got the Tony for the Best Musical. But people who and I adore that show.
Oh,
I hate to add, but it was a wildly different kind of experience from what people got with West Side Story. And I think it took people some time to adjust to this sort of new world of the musical that West Side Story was opening the door to. I mean, it was just a completely different world.
And I remember first seeing this, and I was under the impression, well, the Jets were a group of Italian kids that were fighting with the Puerto Rican kids. On the contrary, these were a gang of Italian, Polish, and Irish kids. In fact, Tony was Anton, and he was Polish.
You don't really get much sense of that. Of the ethnicities,
right,
of any of the Jets, particularly. They don't really talk about it. They are just streetwise New Yorkers. They feel they own their part of the city, and the tension between the two gangs is obvious within basically the first minute of the show. That very exciting, completely danced prologue really sets things up perfectly.
And you think about the great, you say the it's one of the greatest teams, I guess, in musical theater history. Yeah, Arthur absolutely. Lawrence, the playwright and director, West Side Story, La Cage aux Folles, Anastasia, right. The Way We Were, The Turning Point. Jerome Robbins, one of the great choreographers of all time, West Side Story, The King and I, On the Town, Peter Pan, Fiddler, and of course Sondheim with all his great hits, although this was his right. first really recognizable one sure. that he was involved in, and he went on to so right. many different ones. And Robert Wise, who was the director of the producer of the movie, Sound of Music, Sand Pebbles, Citizen Kane. Good Lord. What a group of luminaries to put this together.
Yeah, and it was one of a series of New York musicals that Leonard Bernstein was part of, beginning with On the Town and then Wonderful Town, then West Side Story. This is a great trio of shows that really present New York, you know, so incredibly vividly, although the other two are, well, On the Town is sort of basically a romance, and Wonderful Town is sort of a snappy, jazzy kind of vision of New York, and West Side Story, of course, is a tragedy. And West Side Story had this incredible dance element. I mean, the Robbins choreography, which we are doing, it's reproduced by the choreographer Julio Monge, and it's as fresh as it has ever been. It's so thrilling to see it on our stage, and I think anybody who has seen the movie will have the shock of recognition. They will recognize the moves, because this is Robbins. This is pure Robbins. It's so exciting to have.
And this must be one of the first examples, as you said before, Roger, that the performers had to have be at the top of their game with as an actor, as a vocalist, a singer, yes. and as a dancer.
Yes, the triple threat, we call that. Mm-hmm. You have it in opera too. I mean, productions increasingly put a great emphasis on singers' ability to move. They got to be great actors. They got to be great dancers. They got to be terrific singers. I mean, the kind of singing that they're asked for in West Side Story is not really operatic, although it helps if when Tony and Maria have that sort of legit classical background, but the kind of singing that's required of the characters of Anita and Riff, this is strictly, you know, Broadway singing, and yet it has to be so incredibly characterful. And then the level of dancing that's required of them, of those characters, Riff and Anita, and of Bernardo, the leader of the Jets, and really of all the Jets and the Sharks and their girls, because each member of the gang has a girl who's part of the cast as well. So the level of dancing is just, it's so athletic. It's so incredibly vigorous. I mean, I imagine that the training that our cast is going through to do this dancing is really formidable. So you have that, but you also have incredibly detailed acting going on. And it's, I think, the rare person who has all of these abilities who can function in this kind of show. That the auditions for this West Side Story cast went on for quite a while, because we had to have the exactly right combination of people, you know, who could deal with the dancing, who could deal with the accents, who could deal with just that New York milieu and giving us the impression that they belonged there.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm fascinated. What did Carol Lawrence have to say about seeing the musical?
Well, I wasn't there, alas. Oh, okay. I was unavailable the afternoon that she was here, and it just about killed me, because I've known her. She sings exquisitely on the original cast album from 1957, and so I've known her singing my entire life, basically. So I was longing to meet her, but I couldn't be here. But as far as I know, she talked about, you know, her memories of mm-hmm. Jerome Robbins and the kind of feeling that the cast basically, you know, created together. And for anybody who's interested, there are some interviews with her on YouTube, with her and also with Chita Rivera, who was the first Anita, right. and also made an enormous contribution to the success of the original production. And what I adore is the original cast got together with, you know, the surviving members. This was about maybe eight, nine years ago. Mm-hmm. In New York, there was a benefit that was, I believe, presented by the Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS organization. And they put current performers, you know, people like in their 20s, mm-hmm. together with the surviving members of the original cast. And they did some of the songs together. And there's some rehearsal footage of the two groups, the young people and these older performers together working on these songs, and it's just so exciting. So I regret not being there to hear her address to the members of the cast, which happened backstage after the show. But we do have some marvelous pictures that that show her being extremely, you know, friendly and affectionate with all of these the young people in this cast who were so eager to meet her.
As you might expect from such a classy woman like herself.
It was really when a historically important performer like this is in our midst, it really is such a privilege. There have been certain singers who have come to performances here who were part of, you know, the history of a particular piece, and I'm very historically oriented. I mean, most dramaturgs are, and so it always is very moving to me when this kind of thing happens.
And you talk about the choreography.
Yes. Jerome Robbins.
Jerome Robbins, of course.
Yes.
I had the opportunity having Olivia Newton-John on my show, and we were talking about the final scene, the musical where they're at the carnival in Greece. And I said, how did you do that? I mean, everybody was dancing and singing and going, and everything was happening. I said, she said, well, it took more than a few takes, and the temperature is like 110 degrees. I said, well, everything looks so perfect. And you look at a musical like West Side Story, and the dancing that you see and enjoy night after night is the same as it was in 1957,
yes.
And all the revivals,
yes,
since then, and this,
yes,
now that you have at the Lyric Opera. And how do you do that to make it snappy like that and just very talented people?
That's right. They are 150% committed, every single person on that stage. There's a wonderful esprit de corps, which you absolutely have to have, especially if those dance scenes are going to go off the way they're supposed to. They're very connected to each other, and they put it together in less than a month. It's a miracle,
wow,
that they were able to do it. But these people, a lot of them, first of all, have done the show before,
mm-hmm,
and so they're very conversant with all aspects of it. And They're professionals. I mean, there's some people in this cast who are extremely youthful, you know, just starting out in their careers. There's one guy in it who is still in high school.
Really?
But he has all of this professional work that he's done. And everybody in it, I think, just is so committed to getting it right, you know, and to getting it right night after night. Because they're doing it. It's a Broadway schedule.
Right.
Week, yeah.
And you compare this, of course, to, and you did this very well in one of your essays with Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet.
Yes.
The Capulet Montague Ball becomes the dance at the gym. With Tony,
exactly,
and Maria, where they meet. And I'll let you take,
right,
that from there, the balcony scene.
The parallels are extraordinary. Yes. The equivalent of the balcony scene in Romeo and Juliet, it's on the fire escape,
right,
of the apartment building where Maria lives, and Tony comes to see her there, and so it works perfectly. And the equivalent of the scene on the street in Verona, where there is the duel and Mercutio and Tybalt are killed, that's a rumble,
right,
which takes place under the highway.
Right.
But it's the equivalent scene. And there are a number of other parallels with the Shakespeare. It all works. It's all so beautifully integrated. And, I mean, Arthur Lawrence really was true to the spirit of Romeo and Juliet.
I think it's our responsibility, and we've talked about this before, to expose young people, whether there are children or grandchildren, whether there are students or whether we're mentors to them, whether teachers or whomever, to guide them into the exposure to the classical arts,
yes,
of the great musicals and theater of the,
yes,
past, whether it's Music Man, whether it's West Side Story, whether it's Oklahoma, or just a host of all the great musicals and theater that we've experienced over the years. And now we have a new generation that we have to introduce that great Broadway, the great Broadway musicals too. And that's a big responsibility. And you're doing that so well with every year presenting a different contemporary classical musical on stage as Lyric Opera. And you will continue to do that. But here at West Side Story, here's a great opportunity. Take young people to see this and see what this is all about, because, you know, they want energy. You know, they sit there on TV and they watch the video games and there's a lot of noise. And this has got a lot of energy to it. There's no question about it. And if you're going to bring somebody, young person, bring him to this one.
I think it's also this whole element of athleticism. I mean, when they see that these performers are astounding as athletes. I mean, what it takes for them to create this dancing on stage, I mean, the level of energy that's required of them is as extreme as any sports activity that you can mention. So if people are coming from that, if young people are coming from that world, if that's what interests them, I think they will be incredibly intrigued and riveted when they come to West Side Story, because it's that element is so impressive. At the same time, it's impossible to resist this music. I mean, a lot of people think it's the greatest music that Leonard Bernstein ever wrote, and it's certainly his most popular piece. It's the piece that I think most people will, who know his music will remember him for, and It's extraordinarily not just exciting, but it's also, so much of it is very beautiful. I mean, songs like Maria, Somewhere, One Hand, One Heart, Tonight. I mean, these are ravishingly beautiful songs.
And we can't escape the fact that from a contemporary and day-to-day life standpoint, the ethnicity of politics is prevalent here, even as we see, you know, 50 or 60 or 70 years ago. And I want to quote, if I may, Jamie Bernstein's comment on her father, of course, who wrote the music for West Side Story. She says, "Bernstein was somebody who was always trying to make the world a better place. The best vehicle was through his own music. West Side Story was his most successful attempt to use his music to explore the difficulties we all live within our world and to use music as almost a kind of healing process. West Side Story is about hatred, intolerance, fear of strangers arriving in your neighborhood. These are issues as urgent for us today as they were back then. My father's music really gives us a language with which to explore these issues and find ways to resolve them." It's almost eerie that we're experiencing the same thing so many years later.
Roger. Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. I agree with you.
But
And I love that she said that, because it's so true about Bernstein. I mean, he brought people together through music. And this music of West Side Story, it's known and adored all over the world. It speaks to people instantaneously. And so that's why I think you have to come away from this show sort of transformed, I'd say, especially if you've never seen it on stage before. And most people have it. They may know the movie. But to see it happening in front of you with, you know, on a stage is, to me, unforgettable.
Anyone who comes to see it will forever be changed when they're walking out of the theater. Is that right?
Yes, I really feel that it was this particular. I say that about comparatively few musicals, but this one, yes.
It is easy to run down the checklist of relevance when watching West Side Story. Everything from the way it captures ethnic tensions, youthful passion, police tactics, and gang violence at school and in the streets, to the contradictory ache for separation and assimilation among immigrant populations. It is difficult to imagine a more glorious example of musical theater genius than this one, which comes with a score of absolute brilliance by Leonard Bernstein, a mix of jazz, Latin, opera, and pure Broadway. Choreography by Jerome Robbins that is far and more away more eloquent than any dialogue could ever be. Bristling and passionate, lyrics by Stephen Sondheim, and a book by Lawrence that gives us Shakespeare fit for the mean streets of 1950s Manhattan. In addition, this revival's bursts of Spanish in a couple of scenes and in sections of two or three of the most familiar songs brings an added bit of authenticity. But above all, it is a magnificent jazz ballet. Dance is the real language of this musical. The Chicago premiere of Lyric's new co-production of Leonard Bernstein and Stephen Sondheim's masterpiece West Side Story features nearly 100 artists from Chicago and across the country. Performances of the grand-scale musical run at the Lyric Opera House through June 2nd. Tickets are on sale now and can be purchased at lyricopera.org or by calling 312-827-5600. And on the line with us right now is the very talented dramaturge of the Lyric Opera, whom I always enjoy having a conversation with. It's always engaging, and I'm always leaving it with something that I didn't know before, Mr. Roger Pines. Roger, always a pleasure.
Thank you ever so much. I really appreciate speaking with you.
You know, I look forward to our next talk. I know it'll be something. Tell us what's going on real quickly next year at the Lyric.
We open with The Barber of Seville of Rossini. We have Verdi with Louisa Miller. Oh, we have the Lyric premiere of the extraordinary opera by Jake Heggie and Terrence McNally, Dead Man Walking, based on the novel by Sister Helen Prejean.
Right.
We have our wonderful production of Mozart's Don Giovanni. We have Puccini's very popular Madama Butterfly.
Oh, my favorite.
And the return after almost 20 years of The Queen of Spades by Tchaikovsky, which is a great favorite of our music director, Sir Andrew Davis. Then, of course, we have Wagner's Ring Cycle, the four operas of the Ring. And the musical next year is 42nd Street.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. We have a very special event. Just I think we're doing two, maybe three performances. The finales of the three the Tudor Queen operas by Gaetano Donizetti. The great Sandra Ravanovsky is going to sing the finales where she plays Queen Elizabeth I, Mary Queen of Scots, and Anne Boleyn. So we're greatly looking forward to that. And finally, the wonderful Welsh-based baritone Sir Bryn Terfel will be with us in recital.
As always, an exciting year at the Lyric, and I certainly will look forward to chatting with you about something of what's going to be happening next year.
Thanks. Thanks so much.
Have a great summer. Thanks again, Roger.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Roger Pines, the dramaturge, and always enjoy our conversations together. Always learn something when I'm finished talking, as I hope our audience has about the West Side Story. But by all means, if you have the opportunity, please get down to see it. It's at the Lyric Opera through June 2nd. For information, 312-827-5600. Well, besides graduation time, it's also prom time. And I always enjoy reading an essay about proms written by Mark Mayfield entitled "Prom is a Nightmare for Primal Dads." Mark writes, "The words hit me like a ton of tuxedo-clad bricks. A boy asked me to the prom," said my daughter, an innocent junior girl in a world of predatory senior boys. The primal dad within me wanted to scream. Fortunately, the calm, understanding outer dad spoke up first. "That's wonderful," I said with all the phony excitement I could muster. "What's this young man's name?" I sweetly inquired, knowing that restraining the primal dad within me would be impossible if she replied, "Well, his real name is Wolfgang, but his buddies from prison call him Reefer." But that's not what she said. And I must admit that the boy's real name sounded harmless enough. But isn't that what shocked neighbors always say after the well-behaved boy down the street commits a horrific crime? "We just can't believe it," they say. "Wolfgang always seemed harmless enough." "Is he a nice boy?" I asked, pleadingly hoping she would reply, "Oh, Dad, he's more than just a nice boy. He's the leader of his church's youth group." His recent essay entitled "Why I Agree with My Parents on the Importance of Abstinence, Sobriety, and Early Curfews" was published in several major newspapers and magazines. Oh, and he's also the starting point guard on the varsity basketball team. But that's not what she said. She said, "Yes, Dad, he's very nice." "So, sweetheart, tell me all about what happens at a prom," I said nonchalantly. I was hoping she would reply, "Well, everybody just stands around and discusses important global issues and listens to classical music." But that's not what she said. She said, "Oh, Everybody just dances and stuff. "What will you wear at this big prom?" I asked through clenched teeth, hoping she would reply, "Well, I'll probably wear something that covers me from my toenails to my bottom lip, something that completely conceals all of the anatomical changes I've experienced since my 13th birthday." But that's not what she said. She said, "I'll ask Mom to help me shop for a cute dress." Now, this was bad news because my wife, who isn't equipped with a primal mom within her, is too liberal in her dress-choosing duties. In fact, she openly condones clothing that exposes my daughter's chin. Well, several weeks after my daughter told me about her prom date, my wife and I gathered with other parents to participate in the pre-gala tradition of taking heartwarming pictures of elegantly attired teenagers, including disobedient daughters who shalt surely seethe lots of fatherly fury for knowingly violating the sacred showeth no neck commandment. The festivities progressed smoothly until a deranged middle-aged man subtly lunged at my daughter's date, who had just violated the sacred seeth no neck commandment. The primal dad within me promptly apologized for the ugly incident and promised to behave himself for the rest of the evening. Prom is a nightmare for primal dads, by Mark Mayfield. Hasn't it been for all of us?
I think we're going to the song.
Well, I know. Let's see how much time that took, though. I'll go back. Let's enjoy a little Jeff Golub, The Velvet Touch, and we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. Jeff Gollop, The Velvet Touch, and we're back on The Kevin Moore Show. For years, it was a wreck of a building on one of the most beautiful sites along Lake Michigan, just off the Fullerton Avenue entrance to Lakeshore Drive. It stood dormant for most of each winter, awaking primarily in summer for what, since 1996, was a popular festival showcasing remounts of some of the best productions from the preceding seasons by the city's storefront theater companies. Now, Theater on the Lake, built in 1920 as a sanitarium for tuberculosis patients and subsequently used as a USO center during World War II and as a summertime stage for community theater, has reopened as a wholly rehabbed, modernized facility designed for year-round use as a restaurant, special events facility, and performance space. Renovations to the Theater on the Lake will now allow for expanded programming beyond the traditional summer season and will make the lakefront a welcoming place for residents and visitors to enjoy recreational and cultural. Theater on the Lake's new redesign preserves the historical aesthetics of the structure while incorporating modern elements to transform it into a versatile, multi-use year-round venue. The prairie-style structure, designed by architect Dwight Perkins, who also fashioned the nearby Cafe Brower, Lincoln Park Zoo's Lion House, and the North Pond Cafe. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning businessman, real estate mogul, cutting-edge entrepreneur, recognized Chicago restaurateur, former dean at Deerfield High School, teacher, coach, and mentor at St. Ignatius College Prep, one of the brightest stars in the world of Chicago business, Jesuit-educated and a longtime dear friend of the Moore family and president of Lakeshore Hospitality Group, now celebrating the opening of Chicago's summer season at one of Chicago's most popular destinations for food and drink and entertainment, Chicago's iconic on the lakefront at Fullerton and Lakeshore Drive, Theater on the Lake. On the line with us right now, Mr. Johnny Wren. Johnny, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Oh, Kevin, thanks so much for having me, and thanks for that wonderful introduction.
Always a pleasure, and a full year, and things have gone greater than you ever expected, Jeff.
Kevin, we've been really blessed. It's been a great, great opening year. Now we got to make sure year two, you know, does even better, but it's been fantastic. We've had a great mix, as you know, and as you described, of the restaurant. We have a 19,000 square foot building, about 13,000 on the main floor, which it divides into quarters. Our southernmost quarter overlooks the skyline, has a beautiful patio that we built off of that, and it serves as our restaurant, full-time restaurant and bar. And the rest of the space is event space. And on the far north end, the northernmost quarter, if you will, is a beautiful stage with a state-of-the-art sound system and everything, so we can have concerts, plays, you name it. And in between that is two separate event spaces. Now, oftentimes what we've seen the last year is that people take the whole space for big events, and it's been just, we've had everything from a great party, you know, 1,100 people for the Special Olympics kickoff. We had the James Beard Chef's Night out the other night when James Beard Foundation was in doing their award night.
That's great.
We just had one great event after another. My favorite, Kevin, probably being the Loyola Ramblers Final Four watch party, which will never get old for me. That was a lot of fun.
That's right. That's near and dear to both of our hearts. And, you know, it's a wonderful destination spot. I think that's what's so much different with the Theater on the Lake, because, you know, restaurants are restaurants and people visit the restaurants. But here at Theater on the Lake, you're able to come and you're able to do a lot of different things. You're, as you said, you're able to enjoy the entertainment aspect of it. You're able to walk the lakefront, beautiful views, not only in the summer, but in the spring, in the fall, in the winter. It's gorgeous out there. This winter was terrific to come out there and sit at the bar, have a cocktail in a nice warm space. And if you wanted to take a little stroll by the lake just to see what it's like in the winter, you were able to do that. You have weddings, you have graduations, you have parties, you have political fundraisers, celebrations, business meetings, and there's an opportunity in that whole space and around the space to enjoy all of it.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Kevin. And maybe we could have you be our marketing manager.
You got Susan Nichols. She does a good enough job.
Susan's done a fantastic job. We're blessed to have a really great staff here. And our turnover has been almost, you know, non-existent, which is great. And it's rare in the hospitality field. And we've, you know, staff's been dedicated. And really, we always say service is our main priority. And I think all the guests that come in, you know, can expect great service. They get great service, and thankfully it's kept them coming back, because whether they're here for a meal or to here for to enjoy one of the events, everybody's experience thus far has been really off the charts, and and people have been really happy about the setting. As you say, it's right on the lake. You're looking at the lake. You're looking at the skyline. A little foggy right now with this weather we're having, but it's beautiful nonetheless. So, you know, the city did a great job in the revetment project that redid the lakefront right here, and it's we're the beneficiaries as the people who are now operating this building and managing it, and it's been a treat.
Well, the Wren family name has been a great name in the city of Chicago and the politics and in just the neighborhoods for many, many years. You're continuing that legacy. God bless your mom and dad and that tradition, which they started many years ago. Your family has been involved in so many of the great things in the city of Chicago. You're continuing this. Of course, had a great career at St. Ignatius at Deerfield High School. You touched the lives of the Moore family for many years and kept them out of trouble many times, I'm sure.
Well, Kevin, you've been a longtime friend. I love you. I love the Moores and the whole family. And please give my best to everybody. And like to just tell anybody who's interested in coming down to call down here. We're 312-414-1313. And one of the big things this summer is the Air and Water Show. And we probably have the best place to watch the Air and Water Show. So we're going to have, whether it's a corporate outing or, individuals want to come, there's information on our website that will be up soon. And it's really going to be a spectacular event for all August 16th, 17th, and 18th. It's always a fun weekend.
It's one thing to have a restaurant, John, and you've been involved in this for many years, but it's an accomplishment for people to come back. You know, you can visit sometimes, but unless you have a good staff, if you have people who are welcoming and welcome you to an institution, people are going to say, well, maybe I'll take a pass the next time. But that's what's one of your strengths. Susan, of course, leads that side of things, and she's just comes from a great Dillon family. And we have to say, of course, a little aside here, her mom passed away here just yesterday, and God bless her, and she's resting peacefully as she should, and I think she was a wonderful, wonderful lady. It's a great place to come. And certainly, the food is terrific. You have great chef. You have a diverse menu that changes by the seasons and with all the different opportunities. And you're able to sit there and enjoy it inside or outside, which is what's special.
It is. We have a great terrace that runs the whole length of the building. And like, as I said before, we have a great patio on the southern end of our building. And it's just a fantastic place to have a drink or have a dinner. We have a wonderful brunch on the weekend, and Susan heads up that whole enterprise, which is great. And again, condolences to the whole Dillon family. They lost the matriarch, who's just a wonderful, Mrs. Dillon was just a wonderful person. And I'm sure very proud of Susan, who's just done a great job here and has been a joy to work with. We're really lucky. We get to work with a lot of good friends and good people, and hopefully everybody's enjoying that experience when they come here, because it's a I think all the service comes from the heart, and we're trying to do our best to make sure every day they come in that they're getting the same, expert care.
What do you expect for the second year? This first year has been very successful. The second year coming up, anything that you're kind of shooting for? Any changes you're going to make?
The menu changes seasonally, as you mentioned. One thing we're adding this summer is our lakefront lounge. Last summer was kind of a makeshift deal, and this summer is going to be a much nicer look and feel to it. We're partnering with a soon-to-be-named food partner on food vendor that's going to be outstanding. People are really going to love it. We're buttoning that up now, so I'm not at liberty to discuss it, but it's going to be really outstanding. And that's about 100 yards south of our building, right on the lake, which would just be a nice outpost, whether you're out for a run or out for a bike ride. To stop in there, you're going to get, just top-quality food and have a couple drinks right on the lake. It's really, really going to be spectacular. So we're looking forward to that. We're looking forward to having a few more concerts as well, because we team with the staff, Joe Shanahan and Joe Carcello over at the Metro. Mm-hmm. Have been running. Joe Shanahan's had the Metro for, years and years and years.
Sure.
He's probably the foremost, concert guy in the city, and maybe the godfather of Chicago music in many ways, and we work with him. And so there's going to be a couple concerts out on the grass this summer.
That's
as well
great.
That'll be announced shortly. But also in our theater space, we're going to have a few more concerts. And, it's just going to be, again, should be a great summer, should be a great fall. And we tell people all the time, like, we're open in the winter, too. And like you mentioned earlier, when the snow is out and everything, it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous backdrop when you're down here.
We couldn't be more happy for your success. And tell us about the kids. The kids are doing well up at Loyola?
My oldest is a senior. He's going to graduate, going off to Dayton.
Okay, good.
Sophomore up there, and then two little guys at North Shore Catholic Academy. One who's graduating as well. And they're doing great, Kevin. Thanks for asking. I hope everybody's well in the Moore household.
Well, they are. And Shannon's got three little hoodlums that are looking forward to coming down to the theater to like run around a little bit. We can let them do that, right?
We'd love to see them. Absolutely.
A phone number, website, if people like get some information, John.
Sure, it's theaterontheLake.com, and then the phone number is 312-414-1313.
God bless you, my pal. Continued success. Whenever you need anything from us, you know where to call, and certainly give our best to your bride.
Thank you so much, Kev. All the best to everybody.
Good, my pal.
Great talking
to you.
Thanks,
bud.
Thanks again.
Johnny Wren, one of the great people of Chicago, great family of Chicago from the north side, the St. Ignatius guy, Loyola guy. Wonderful venue, the Theater on the Lake. Right there, Fullerton and Lakeshore Drive. For information, 312-414-1313. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope your listeners have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our guests, Roger Pines, the award-winning dramaturge from the Lyric Opera of Chicago, who's now presenting the Leonard Bernstein and Stephen Sondheim masterpiece West Side Story through June 2nd at the Lyric Opera House of Chicago, 20 North Wacker. 312-827-5600 for tickets and information. Certainly a don't-miss destination. And our good pal Johnny Wren, the proprietor, owner of Chicago's iconic gem on the lakefront at Fullerton and Lakeshore Drive, Theater on the Lake, for entertainment and food and camaraderie and cocktails, with Susan Dillon doing a terrific job coordinating things. For information, 312-414-1313. Finally, a famous writer once said one ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day.
It's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. In your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. If we can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, then a luck then I suppose the music.